Welcome to the Plan Simple Meals podcast. I am your host, Mia Moran. Moms have the power to change the future, one meal at a time. The Plan Simple Meals podcast is for busy moms who want to create a healthier, happier home. Listen in for informative conversations and valuable strategies to make meals healthy, meaningful, and fun. Let's do this. Hello, busy mamas. Welcome to this episode of the Plan Simple Meals podcast. We are on our second to last episode where I am going through each day for 7 days in a row, seven of the 101 doable changes that are in this mini ebook that I have created for you. That if you haven't gotten it yet, you can get at plansimplemeals.com/101changes. And I am super excited about this list because I really feel like when I focus on one thing and really look at that thing and figure out how to make it work in my life over the course of a week, where there's space to make it happen, or, you know, how to get buy-in from my family, if I'm really focused on it, usually I find the answer. And by focusing on that one thing, I just open up this platform for all the other changes that I've either worked on before or know I'm supposed to do. I make space for them sort of inadvertently. So I don't want any of you guys to listen to this episode and go off and try to do all seven things you hear, nor do I want you to download the episode and have all 101 things be items on your to-do list. That is not the point. The point is that you have this master list that you can tune into once a week and figure out what it is that you're going to work on for this week. And eventually you're going to see how all these things build together. And a couple months from now, if you do this every week, you're going to look back and just be able to say, wow, I did it. I have these habits under my belt. And the other cool thing about a week is if you try something that really doesn't work for you, it's only been a week, right? So I feel like there's some things that are a little hard to make habits around, and they really do take that week. So this is about not giving up after a day or two, really focusing, but also just knowing that after a week, if it really doesn't work and you've given it your all, that's proof that you can move on to the next thing and not have to worry about that thing anymore. Does that make sense? So today's episode's focus is going to be, I've chosen seven out of the 101 changes that are focused on the food and either the mindset or the planning piece, but where those things, kind of the food, the mindset, and the planning, intersect in our lives. And sometimes these things just get in the way of either how we plan or our belief system around the food. So that's kind of how I've grouped these things. They're all really great weekly experiments and fun things to do and all things that I've done in my house and have made an impact. So let me just find my list. And here is where we're going to start. We are going to start with read 3 new labels next time you go to the store. So very often we either get in the habit of buying things and we just buy those things over and over again. And actually there's greatness in that, because I think that sometimes we overthink this a little bit and make it too complicated, and then we end up getting out of our own healthy habits. But sometimes we are eating things that we think are good but actually aren't. So I want you to pay attention to labels of things that you're pulling off the shelves, whether they're old favorites or something new that you've noticed. You know, I'm always getting granolas, and I feel like there's all these granolas always popping into the aisles, and gratefully there's more and more gluten-free ones, and lately there's even grain-free ones, and it's really fun to see them. So I look at those labels and I see, like, which ones are just pure ingredients, which ones, the second ingredient is sugar, so those are automatically discounted. I look for the gluten-free component because we need that in our house. But I'm just reading the labels and seeing what's in it, what they're saying. I also need dairy-free, so I make sure that that's the case. And I found some great things by just reading some new labels when I go to the store, some new granolas that I wouldn't have gotten because I'm kind of an easy person. So granola is one of those things that sometimes we get in bulk and just order, and that's that. So that's a fun one. A big aha one was reading yogurt containers. So as I was trying to wean us a little bit off of sugar a couple years back, I'd always heard that yogurt had sugar, but then I really, spent some time diving into that. Read those yogurt labels. That's a big aha. So starting to read labels and just, taking note of what's on them. Sometimes I'll snap a picture with my phone just so I can go back and like look up if there's something I don't understand on a label. One of my general rules, because I'm not always that, I'm not always that good. Like sometimes I'll snap a picture but not come back and actually look up the stuff. So one of my things is if I don't understand more than three of the ingredients, I just don't get it anymore. Like that was just a rule I made for myself. So you can come up with your own rules, but as you're actually reading labels, it will really help you to do that and really take in what's in the food. Another amazing one is breads. So, we don't eat gluten, but when you look at some of those gluten-free breads, I'm just like, really? There's like nothing. They might be gluten-free, but there's not much real food in them. So really paying attention to labels is a great one to play with for a week. Highly recommended that some week that is what you do. Number two is start a food journal. I would recommend starting off with yourself, but then you can also start to take note of a child if there's, if you're dealing with any issues or you're trying to get to the bottom of something. But sometimes, I hear a lot, I don't really have gluten, or I don't really have dairy, or I'm pretty good about keeping my sugar low. So sugar's one that actually you can be pretty good at keeping low. But with dairy and gluten or a lot of the other allergens, if you have a sensitivity or an allergy, it can't be low. It has to be none. So you kind of have to play detective. And keeping a food journal is a really good way to sort of keep yourself honest about that, because you're going to write it down. But also, some things just sneak in, and you can start to see where things sort of sneak in when you're not aware, or when you're too hungry and you haven't put something in your purse, or that. You say you're getting all your vegetables, but actually you're not getting all your vegetables on busy days. So whatever it is, keeping a food journal is really, really, really helpful. It's just a helpful tool in getting the information you need to really make some of these changes stick. And a week is a really great amount of time to hit a bunch of different situations, give it a try, get into a habit around it. And see if it's going to make an impact on your life, because it does take a little bit of extra time for sure. But if it's really going to lead you down the path of figuring out what your food is, which is my personal wish for everybody, is that you know what food really makes you feel fabulous, starting a food journal is a great one. So, number one was read three new labels at the store. Number two is start a food journal. Number three, this is a fun one. So reinvent an old family recipe so that it's healthier. And that might look different for everybody what healthier is, but actually the actual doable change from the list says reinvent an old family recipe so that it's gluten-free and dairy-free. And so we've had a lot of fun with this. It's like it helps you understand, what those things do. Like I found that dairy is a pretty easy substitute, like butter for oil and rice milk or almond milk or some sort of seed milk for regular milk. It's pretty even. Gluten's a little bit different. It's a little bit more persnickety, so we've had to do a little bit more, searching around that. Sometimes what I'll do is like I'll think of that old family recipe and then I'll Google that. Plus, so like brownies, gluten-free, dairy-free, or lasagna, gluten-free, dairy-free. And I'll start, with seeing what other people have done, but then really pouring in those memories that I have of it into it so that we can really make it our own. And it's a really fun way. I've mentioned on a couple of these podcasts just telling stories because storytelling is such a powerful way to, stay healthy. Because if you look back, storytelling is probably a way that got you into some of your bad habits as well. So stories are huge, both understanding, which ones have given us habits that maybe don't serve us anymore, and also for having a tool to really pass the healthy habits onto our kids in a fun and way that they can really take it in. And stories are great from that. Every kid loves hearing about their grandmother or their heritage or whatever it is. So reinvent an old family recipe. And that also makes you feel like you're not missing out on something. So when family members say, hey, I just made, I always use the brownie recipe because that's what I used in my book. My grandmother made these amazing recipes. And there are many family members who still have their tins of these frozen brownies in their freezer. And I very happily can say I have mine too, but mine are just, mine are different. Mine are made not of sugar and butter and whatever, they are made of dates and nuts and raw cacao, and I love them and they taste awesome. And that is the way that I remade that recipe, and they really serve me, and they help me become the person who my grandmother wanted me to be. But brownies for my body and my makeup didn't help me be that person. Does that make sense? So that's a really fun one to play with for a week and just, bring up some old memories, tell some stories with your kids, and just have fun with yourself. It's fun. I find it really fun to do that. Okay. So number four is make a salad dressing twice a week so that salad is always easy. So there's many excuses for not making salad easy, and my next change is going to involve the ingredients. But salads are such a good thing to be easily be able to throw together, and salad dressing is one of those things that can be filled with sugar and definitely have gluten, and hard to find one that tastes good and has the right ingredients. And it's such an easy thing to make. And I actually, it's funny, when I traveled a couple years back in Europe, I think I was in Paris, and I was really nervous because I had lived in Paris before, and it was way before all this stuff, and I had eaten a lot of gluten and dairy when I was in Paris. I mean, just think, like cheese and baguettes. And it was a fun time. It was a great time. I was, I don't even think I was 20 yet. So fun. And I felt okay, but I knew I couldn't do that this time. So, I was nervous because I had these memories of what Paris meant, and to me, it was pretty much like a big baguette and some crepes and some, oh my God, some cheeses. So when I first went into a restaurant, when we first got there, it was kind of a hole in the wall. We got there late, I think, and we were in sort of a neighborhood we didn't know very well. So, Paris has those little cafes everywhere, which are sort of meant to go get a beer or a coffee, but they have a little bit of food. And on their menu, they always have salads. And so I remember just trying to ask the guy, like, do you make it? Like, I just want to make double sure it didn't have gluten in it because I didn't want to get sick my first moment in Paris. And, he was looking at me like I was insane. And he's like, we make our dressing. It is, oil and mustard and lemon and salt, and it's simple. And I just remember thinking, we don't, that is not an American custom. There's many packaged dressings, and many times you ask in a restaurant, that's not a high-end restaurant, but more of those hole-in-the-wall situations, or a pizza parlor, or a sub place, and nobody knows what's in the dressings. And there's almost always a lot of sugar and gluten and those unpronounceable ingredients that help it stay shelf stable. So making your own dressings is an awesome one. And with that might go finding a container so that you can carry the dressing, downloading the salad in a jar from our website so you can just pack the dressing at the bottom of your jar and not have to worry about that extra thing, but making that dressing so it's always there. So at dinner time, you can always start the family with a salad. If everyone's hungry, that's such a great trick to just make the salad and let everybody, have that while you're pulling together the rest of dinner and getting them full on all those leaves, because they'll eat them if they're hungry. Okay, so make salad dressing twice a week. That is my one, and Sunday's always a good day for that. So that's number four. Number five is chop veggies once or twice a week So salad is easy. So this is the same. You could even do this at the same time that you make salad dressing. You could actually, it's the only time in all 49 changes I'm going to tell you that you could merge these two. if you're overwhelmed by food, one week maybe you do the salad dressing and the next week you do the chopping of veggies, but you merge them together in action. So it's not two extra items on your to-do list. It's like one thing that you're doing to move salads forward. Does that make sense? So chop veggies once or twice a week, so it's easy, and you can ch be chopping veggies for other things too. I'm just using salads as an example, but having veggies chopped is just a very easy way to incorporate them into meals, in a way that you don't have to feel like it's extra work. Because a lot of times what I hear is that, chopping, washing, all this stuff just is extra time that I don't feel like I have. That's a complaint I hear from people. And you do have the time if you batch it. If you batch things together, it's just a more efficient way to do anything in life, but surely cooking, it works well for that. Okay. So let me just do my count. We have read three new labels at the store, start a food journal, reinvent an old family recipe so it is gluten-free and dairy-free, make salad dressing twice a week so salad's always easy, chop veggies once or twice a week so salad or meals are easy. So those are five. Number six is, ooh, this is a good one. Choose one veggie you would love your child to eat and commit to including it in dinner 7 times. So, how often does a child say no to a food, or a smaller child have a tantrum and throw it across, or, just you get this yucky face after you've spent so much time making a meal and you're just done. You're done before the meal's even done with like trying to get them to eat it, to try again, but get this, hear this. When our children are babies, we really are good about introducing one food at a time. And then there becomes a point where they become good eaters. And all of a sudden, it's almost like in a day, we add it all in. But really, our taste buds are not fully developed until we're fully developed as people. So it's like well into puberty that our taste buds are developing. And so there are like sweeter foods taste better. So that's why those orange, carrots, sweet potatoes are always more liked than like the greens as we're, as children are babies. And so it just takes acquiring tastes and getting our taste buds used to foods. And this can take 7 to 10 times. So a fun thing in a week is to plan out if there's something you're working on, like if you'd really love your child just to be able to eat salad or just to be able to eat broccoli, or just to finally like avocado, then spend the week playing with introducing that food in different ways and making it fun so that you're introducing this food over and over again. Maybe it's different sauces that you're dipping the broccoli in. Maybe it's that you're cutting it different ways. Maybe in one way it actually disappears into a green smoothie or into a soup. So use your imagination. Think of different ways that you can get your child to like this food. And make a plan, like literally write out what these 7 ways are and be willing to pivot as you go along so that you actually get it in this many times. Because I know I do this still to this day, that when somebody doesn't like something, it's hard, and you don't, if you, I'm sort of overtaking it personally, though there was definitely a time when I did take it personally. But even if you don't take it personally, it's still like, why would I bother doing that again? Why would I bother wasting money, wasting time, and you just sort of move on. But 7 to 9 times, that's like a studied fact. And understanding that our taste buds are developing is sort of I think, a nice way to remember that as we're dealing with not so nice attitudes throughout the week. So that's number six. Really plan for how to include whatever food into your family's life, 7 to 10 times in a week. So if the food that you're trying to get them to like is something that's not a fruit or a vegetable, maybe you span this out over more than a week. But if it's a fruit or vegetable, you could probably figure out some fun ways to do that throughout different meals, and make that work. Okay, so last but not least, Ooh, this is a good one. And it kind of goes back to the household thing. In fact, I think I might have mentioned it in the household thing. But this one is remove packaging when you put food away. Use glass jars instead, or use some BPA free something instead. But and this is something that you this would be sort of like an organizational thing you would do over the course of a week, and then it would be something that you play around with in future weeks as you bring stuff home. So there's a number of layers to this. One, there's many pantry foods, and we go over in our class, which is launching soon, Mealtime Mastery. We have a whole week on filling our pantries really well and getting organized and getting those things in on a monthly basis that we don't need to buy every week. And so a lot of times those things are actually cheaper bought in bulk. So that's a reason to put them into these like canisters and jars. So, I get nuts and seeds and dried fruit and dried beans and grains. We buy huge things of brown rice and jasmine rice. And we just sort of refill them into our cabinet over the course of the month. Like that is not something that I buy on a regular basis. It's actually really way more expensive to buy things like rice and quinoa on a weekly basis than it is to buy them in bulk. So I'm putting all those things into these jars, and what I realized then is that they started to compete with anything that I brought in a box, because anything that you bring in a box, from crackers, we don't have that much processed food in our house, but crackers, the few cereals that we do have, I do get bars, different protein and health bars, and that's like easy to bring on snack. I do try to make those. That's my experiment from week to week, but I do definitely still buy some that I know have the ingredients that I believe in. And all those things, when they come home in a box, are just like another thing that's competing, because it's, the boxes are always more exciting because that's marketing. That's what the job of the companies are. So even if you're still bringing like sugary cereals into your house, by just putting them into another container, and that being near like a sugary cereal next to a healthy granola in two glass containers, you guys, they look the same. There's unless you were getting like the blue and purple cereal, which please don't. But if you're getting just normal cereal, even if it has more sugar on it, they just all look like brown food in a container. And that really helps to be making decisions based on the food rather than the packaging. And this is a really, really important thing to work on, especially as you're trying to get out of having any of that food with packaging, which is a longer process. That definitely takes, some time and some effort. But a great thing to get in the habit of is just unpacking food and just having it in grabbable things. So if like we get a box of bars, I don't unwrap each bar because that sort of defeats the purpose of the convenience of the bar. But we do take them out of the box, we recycle the box, and then we have this bin that we put those into. And to be honest, the wrappers are less exciting than the box. So that really is helpful. Like a lot of times the box will have animals on it and whatever, but then the wrapper is just silver. So that is a really fun experiment that will help you also get more organized. It will have all sorts of ripple effects. It will help you get more organized. It will help you with the label reading. All these things kind of go together. So those are my seven doable changes that merge sort of the food with the mindset with the scheduling, because I feel like these sort of span all those topics that are the ones that we dive into to really create a healthy and happy life. So, as I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, these seven doable changes are not meant to be done all at once. They are meant to be done one-on-one, except that one that I said you could merge. And they're meant to be done one a week, but you'll see that there is a building effect. There is this idea that we're stacking habits on top of each other to create this lifestyle that we want. And these are part of a list of 101 changes that you can grab if you go to plansimplemeals.com/101changes. And with that also comes this mini email course. And then I wanted to remind you that I am doing a class on redesigning your mornings so that you really have a day that you're taken care of, that your food is taken care of, that whatever else you have to get done in a day around parenting and work, all that gets done because of this time that you activate and set aside in the mornings. It is a practice that has served me so well over the past years, and I'm really eager to share it with as many people as want to hear it. So I'm hosting a free online class that you can come and join me, and I will tell you what I got. So you can get to that. You can sign up for that by going to plansimplemeals.com/learn. And I am trying a new platform for this, so there is going to be a limited number of seats, but if it fills, I will do it again, I promise. So make sure to sign up and then to show up, because that will give you the biggest impact and the most chance of hearing this sooner rather than later. All right, you guys, have a fabulous day. I will see you on the next episode, which will be the last in this series of seven doable changes, which gets us to 49 altogether, which we've described in a little bit more detail than in the list of 101 doable changes. All right, you guys, see you tomorrow. Bye. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Plan Simple Meals podcast. If you like what you heard, the biggest compliment you can give us is to share Plan Simple Meals with a friend and subscribe, rate, and review our podcast at iTunes. I absolutely love sharing simple solutions to help busy families eat clean and live well. Visit healthymomsmeetup.com and come join in on the fun. In our free group, you can chat with me and other health-seeking moms, get new recipes and tips, and never be at a loss in the kitchen again. Come join the fun at healthymomsmeetup.com. I cannot wait to meet you there.